It's time for Mac Break Weekly, and the Apple Watch leaks come fast and furious. Who got an invite? Who didn't get an invite? Let's talk Apple Watch and a whole lot more. Mac Break Weekly's next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 444, recorded Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015. Apple Watch and wait. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Join over 5 million users running their business with ease. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at Gazelle.com. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Go to squarespace.com and enter the offer code MACBREAK at checkout to get 10% off. It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Oh, we got stuff to talk about. Somebody said you should just call it Apple Weekly. Okay, but for historic reasons, we call it Mac Break Weekly. And that's Renee Ritchie, who's laughing right now. He's at iMore.com. Very smart. You put no word from Apple at all in there, just an I.
But now they're dumping the iLego. I should have gone with Apple logo more, but then I would have been sued. I mean, there's no good answer for this
stuff. You can't win.
No.
From Montreal, how's the weather?
It's slowly getting better. Good. Winter is still here.
Not patio weather yet?
It is if you want to come out of your igloo and take a couple steps out and chill your beverage nicely. It's beautiful patio weather.
Very nice.
Chill your beverage nicely. Nice. Sorry.
Chill your beverage. And from Rwanda, Mr. Alex Lindsay of PixelCore.com, and he's in his classroom in Rwanda.
Yes.
Kigali?
I'm in Kigali for the next 10 days. So lots of beans and classes and
how much,
so on and so
are
forth.
You got a little snow there in Kigali?
You know, there's not a lot of snow here. No. Low in the lower 60s and high in the lower 80s. And it's kind of just nice and humid. A little rain in the afternoon. That's pretty much it.
Love that. It's probably that way year round, isn't it? Pretty much.
It's pretty much the same whole time. It's just a matter of whether it rains more or not. Yeah. I mean, we're pretty close to the equator. So
Singapore's like that. It just, it never changes.
It's a pretty big shift. I was driving through freezing rain to get to the airport, you know, from my flights got canceled over the weekend from Hilton Head. I thought I'd go for a warm vacation that turned out to be very cold. And then drove through it, so it was quite a thing. I got on the plane, it was freezing, got off the plane, and it was cozy.
That's nice.
So, yeah.
But, you know, really, the king of this is the man who is in snowbound New England, Mr. Andy Anatko from the Chicago
Sun-Times. We are attempting to shake ourselves from our icy chains and reclaim the freedom that is our birthright as the patriots, the founders of our freedom of America.
More tea in the harbor, sir!
If we threw the tea in the harbor, it would just bounce off and skid. It would be an empty gesture at best.
I saw pictures of Niagara Falls frozen. Wow. I thought, wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Somebody did some like drone flights over Boston, like of Boston Common and Fenway Park. And it really does look like, oh, so that's what's going to look like in 8,000 years when we're all dead. And now the dinosaurs reclaim the
after 100 inches of snow.
It looks like abandoned property.
Oh, man. Here it is by drone. I love these drones. I got to tell you. We get such great footage. Yeah. So, did you get an invite? While we're watching.
Doesn't that look like fun?
While we're watching. But it's so colonial. I can just practically see Ben Franklin wandering.
That is Beacon Hill. That's like one of the oldest parts of town. John Hancock. And there's the Bunker Hill Memorial.
This is what, it's amazing that's what we could do with
public garden.
With these quadcopters.
George Washington there is one of my standard test shots, only there's normally not.
Usually it's a little greener. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Just think of how cool it would have been to have a drone in the revolution. That's when I think of these things. You
think
know,
of the footage we have. Just think of the footage.
Ramparts, you know.
Did you, Andrew, did you get an invitation from the fruit company?
I did not. I believe Apple knew that Logan was going to be shut down this weekend anyway. We're getting another storm. So they decided to be proactive and make sure that they don't even tempt me with an invitation.
Nobody from Boston got an invitation this year.
That's what I keep telling myself.
You know, you're weird because you're on and off. We were talking about this on Twitter, I think, that you're with Jason Snell, who's going, of course. And I thought, you know, one thing that I thought was kind of cool is that even Joe Jason Snell is no longer editor-in-chief of Macworld, you know. He's a blogger now, Six Colors, his blog. They still invite him, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
And he said it really is about the relationship, not about the publication. But he said you're an odd case because sometimes you get invited, sometimes you don't. And that's atypical.
Yeah, and that's why I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that there's like a formal blacklist or there's a good list, a naughty nice or naughty list and a good and a nice list. There are just a lot of variables, most of which you won't understand.
Yeah.
And so again, every time there's an event, I anticipate maybe getting invited, maybe not. It's either way, I can do my job, so it's really not a problem.
Renee, you did. In fact, I know you and Serenity are coming down for the event.
Yes, sir.
That's exciting.
They're taking mercy on me and getting me out of this weather.
Yeah, thank goodness. I was actually want to find the invitation. I want to find an invitation that has the text on it because a lot of. So did yours just look like that?
It had at the bottom. It said Spring Forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
So I've seen some. I guess maybe some publications put that information up. Spring Forward. It says with what looks like the NBC Peacock.
Must see TV.
And Apple will hold a press event March 9th. You're invited. It's the Yerba Buena Center, which is a smallish place. That's what the iPad was announced. And it will be Monday.
Yep. 10 a.m. Pacific.
I think given Spring Forward, it is the day after we enter summertime here in the United States. But I think given the name, the title Spring Forward, we can assume it's a watch.
Isn't that when the clocks go back? I think spring, I believe, is March 20th. We've been very focused on that date of late.
Oh, I thought, spring is March 20th. But summertime, we go into our daylight savings time on March 8th. I was told, yeah, unless I'm completely.
Exactly right. Yeah. According to no less a source than Google, daylight savings time, Sunday. You search for end of daylight savings, you get a card that says Sunday, March 8th. 2 a.m. is March
8th. And I'm bitter about that twice a year.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, it's just why? Why?
What was it? Was it you who said, "I just want the sun overhead at noon, no matter what time of year"?
I just don't want to change my watch. I don't want to figure out what my offsets are. I don't want to because they're different countries are different offset.
Well, that's right because it's Sunday for us, but I don't know if it's Sunday everywhere. Is it Sunday in Wales that you change the time? Yes. I have three Welshmen in front of me, so I would know.
The worst thing is like when you're flying. I'm glad that I don't have to at least fly to San Francisco on like daylight savings day because when it goes clocks go back. Because I had a conference that I went to like 3 years in a row in which my travel day was that Sunday, and so I was also like flying three time zones west, so I would lose like 4 hours. And I was just an absolute – and because of Sunday flight schedules, the only way to get a flight out that's going to really work is going to be to leave the house at 6 or 7 in the morning. And there'd be a reception at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
And I would be an absolute freaking wreck. And I have to speak in front of like 500 people at 9 a.m. on Monday the next day. So I looked and felt my best on the,
Andy,
on the kickoff day.
You have an invitation. We are going to broadcast, of course, because Apple is streaming it. Good news. We will do our usual snark. Our Mystery Theater, Science Theater 3000 version, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Yep. Eastern, 1800 UTC. Oh, no, it's 1700 UTC.
There's going to be so many people missing it by an hour.
An hour. And Andy, you said you could join us?
I absolutely will.
You'll watch live with us? Yay. And then the next day, a week from today, we'll do Mac Break Weekly with Serenity and Renee in studio.
Yep.
You guys are going to come up.
Both of whom will be wearing suspiciously long sleeves that they keep out of the camera range.
So obviously it's the watch. Although Tim Cook said at the earnings call that it won't be available till April, so we know it's an announcement for a product that will ship 3 weeks later or thereabouts, or as much as 6 weeks later, I guess.
Yeah, that's odd because usually it's the same day or 10 days later, or you know, it's unusual to have the event, I think, that far ahead.
Is it possible that it's ready?
The rumor was that it was tentatively scheduled for March, but they pushed it to April because they wanted a little bit more time. And I'm happy for Apple to take every minute of that.
Oh, yeah. Let's get personally. It right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And on the totally crazy side, it may not be the watch.
Oh, come on. Stop it. Just stop it. Knock it off.
That would just be showing off, wouldn't it? You know, like, it's like, yeah, we've got this big watch coming, but let me show you this other thing that we have coming.
Oh, the watch. We'll do that in a couple of weeks.
Seriously, though, if they had a minor piece of news that they knew that they're not going to get any attention for, if they just simply say, well, here's what we're actually going to be doing with Beats. Here's the new Beats music app. They know if that's a way to get not only like 500 people to fly out for this event, but also to be paying attention because, okay, but this relates to the watch. How? Okay, so the music plays on the watch? Like that, I wouldn't be shocked, but I think that this is such an important launch for Apple and such a unique one for them, too, because they have never you really have to go back to the iPad for when else have they launched something when there is no indication that people actually want this, not even any indication that people understand what this is. I mean, Leo, you and I wear smartwatches every day. We know how cool they are, but I still have problems explaining to people, here's why I love wearing this watch every single day. So they really need to spend a lot of time crafting a Game of Thrones scale story with texture and effects and special guests and flying dragons and everything they can do to make the case for why you want to spend $350 for a new gadget wristwatch.
Yeah, yesterday in the New York Times, big article, the Apple Watch is nearly ready, but is the public? There is a considerable question mark over whether people want a smartwatch.
I wonder if we're overthinking this. I wonder if the mere fact that Apple's making who makes your phone? Yeah. Apple. Who makes your tablet? Apple. Apple has a watch now? Oh, that's interesting. Let's go take a look at it. Oh, look, shiny. I wonder if the tech press is overthinking this.
The fact that we go back to the iPhone, where a lot of people were willing to buy it, not only because it was cool, because it was a cool Apple gadget, despite the fact that it really wasn't ready for mass consumption for at least 2 years after that. So there's I don't see any way that this is not going to be a big hit. The question is if it's going to be how soon do they get normal people to start buying these as opposed to Apple fans who are just excited about the next Apple product.
So is this a fair headline, selling a smartwatch to an uninterested public? We're interested.
Well, uninformed rather than uninterested.
Well, and I think that a lot of it's going to – one of the advantages that Apple has is, of course, they're going to get this huge surge of the, you know, the believers that want to try it out and get ahead of everything. And that makes it easier to develop for. You know that you have a lot of – one large group of people that are all doing the same thing at the same time. And I do think that when you start to see the kind of things, being able to, you know, I think we're going to see companies that change the security system so you walk up and just open the door. You don't have to have some little card.
In fact, Tim Cook said that a number of hotels are already adopting Apple Watches, not only as a way to open the door, which they showed at the event, but to check in, just to bypass the front desk.
I need the watch to tell me what room I'm in so I can remember which room I'm in this
week. That
would
be nice. That
would be good. And just go to this
room. NFC might be the killer component inside this watch, because you can do so many things with NFC that you can't do through radio. And that is the sort of feature that if I can open a door just by tapping my watch against it, or hopefully that's a sapphire crystal on it, but just by proximity, a lot of people, I think that's no one's going to spend $350 for that one feature, but that's worth $103 at least, and that makes it a lot more palatable.
And the thing I like so much about that technology is that I've used Bluetooth trusted objects or Bluetooth trusted devices before, and I don't really like them. They're deal breakers for me because, you know, if I grab Phil Nickinson's little dongle off his shirt, I'm Phil Nickinson. I can unlock all his stuff. And what I like about things like Touch ID and with the Apple Watch is either it's a fingerprint or it has to maintain skin contact. So once it's authorized, it knows that it's on you. Take that watch off. It's useless for somebody else. But that watch on me could unlock my house, could unlock my car, could unlock my Mac, could unlock 1Password for me. So there's a lot of potential, I think, once you make the sensor not, you know, brilliant, but a little bit smarter, and they start to understand all that information.
Fingerprint's going to be so important going forward, and Apple really led the way with that. We've seen fingerprint readers before, but none of them as good as Touch ID. Samsung announced this week its Galaxy S6, which will be available next month, and it has a new fingerprint reader that doesn't require a swipe.
The S is for shameless.
Oh, come on. That's cheap.
No, I'm so disappointed in that phone. I see. I really? Love the new HTC.
It looks a lot like an iPhone in some angles.
I love the new HTC. I love the new Motorola. I think they're doing it. Like the HTC One, yes, it's iterative, but I like a lot about HTC to begin with. The Motorola, I think they're really pushing things down market. Samsung,
you're talking
is a
about
company,
the E.
I, Absolutely, the Moto E. I think, you know, bucks. For people who are interested in those kinds of phones, making smartphones accessible to more people in more parts of the world, I think they deserve tremendous credit. Samsung as a company, and based not just on all the inside stories that are floating around how they're working internally as a company these days, but to me, like, I don't ever want to care more about my phone than the person who makes it. And the intent of Samsung to me is so directionless. I don't know who to recommend that phone to anymore. Like, it used to be if you wanted a removable battery, if you wanted waterproofing, if you wanted certain features.
They took the stylus, the removable battery, the SD card, and waterproof.
And it looks like there's no reason that phone has to look from any angle like an iPhone. There's no reason that Samsung Pay has to look like Apple. I mean, all of that stuff to me just shows an absence of design culture. And I want people who are passionate about phones.
Nobody else has done the curved thing around the edge like that. That's
interesting,
unique.
I can't wait to get the Galaxy Note Edge. The Galaxy Note has always been a way more interesting phone for me than their straight Galaxy S.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the Note again this year.
Yeah, that won't be until the fall probably. But
no.
Yeah. It's just that what else are you... It's unmistakable that this design direction of the new Galaxy S6 is certainly influenced by the iPhone. We can even go so far as to say it was a ripoff of a lot of different design elements. But when you get into like little details, like I just don't like it when there's a comment like, of course, a fingerprint ID that works by actually touching it. Of course, they ripped that off from the iPhone, as opposed to, no, for years, that's been the desired way to make fingerprint ID work. They just now have a component that is not made by Apple that makes that work.
I'm surprised. In fact, I feel like there'll be lawsuits on this because I thought Apple really owned this.
That's a stupid lawsuit. But there was also like a couple of people are saying, oh, and guess what? Let's see. The iPhone 6 has a bumped out camera lens. Gee, I wonder if the S6 is going to have a bumped out camera lens.
They've all had bumped out cameras.
Exactly. Here's one from 2012.
Like, everything is a remix. Copy forward. That's all I'm asking. I think the Note really does copy forward. It takes good ideas and makes better ideas out of them. But I think the Galaxy S series is not.
I'm going to buy the Edge. I think that's really cool looking. There you see how close the bottoms are.
Fake Absolutely. Johnny Ives said they got the lightning port wrong.
Fake Johnny Ives, right. Hey, but look at John Gruber's tweet.
They got the lightning port wrong in the sense that this cable does not make any money for Apple ever. So that's the wrong way to do that.
I'm actually a little disappointed they don't do the new USB, USB 3C, because that would have been reversible. That would have been nice. But on the other hand, nobody has that cable yet, so... John Gruber tweets the picture from Android Authority of how you register a fingerprint on the Samsung Galaxy S6. Looks familiar, writes Gruber. Can't quite put my finger on where I've seen something like this before. It's you're registering the fingerprint just exactly as you do on the
Samsung Pay looks the same, and S Voice look the same.
The good news about this, though, is that you don't have to push. It is very much like Touch ID. And I'm encouraged because I thought Apple might have, with their acquisition of Authentic, really kind of, snapped that up and owned the idea that you could just put your finger on it.
They get like a year to 2 years advantage by doing technology. Even like when you look at unibodies on Macs, they get about a year or 2 years head start by owning the technology, and then everyone else sort of catches up. And I think it's great that Samsung does this.
Are you going to yell at Apple if they do a curved screen next year?
Samsung's going to build it. They're going to buy it.
You know, somebody said that too when we were doing the Samsung event. Maybe it was you, Andy, that one of the things that Samsung's making is a demo of all the parts you can get for your phone.
I think that was part of the keynote where they list up here. They went to the technical section with the saying, here's all the components that go into it. They didn't say it explicitly, but I think it was not an accident. They're saying, oh, and here's the Samsung made CPU, and here's the Samsung made type of RAM we're using, and here's the Samsung made. I don't think that was a dig against other manufacturers, but it did. It was part of the ongoing picture they wanted to paint of we don't just make phones, we make components that go into phones, and so we're not. So please ignore how much this phone looks like the iPhone 6.
I have to say, I'm kind of with you, Andy. If there's an innovation from somebody, whoever it is, and it really is good, such as Touch ID, I want to see it on more phones, as long as they're not violating patents. So I want to see it on more phones.
I think it is tasteless when you see something as bold as the way that they did S Voice, the way that they're doing the fingerprint registration, stuff like that. But even when, like, I'm testing an Android phone, I'm thinking things like, gee, I really hope Apple steals this idea for the iPhone.
Yeah.
Because I want the best phone possible, and I also want the best phone possible for all consumers. So I don't care if they're even just saying outright in the keynote, yeah, we really like the way that Apple did their camera assembly, so we did one just like it because we wanted to have the best camera assembly we could possibly have.
It'd be nice if they just admitted it, right?
I want to speak clearly. When I say shameless, I don't mean that as intentionally as an insult. One of my favorite quotes from Buffy ever was when Cordelia said, like, shame is something to be proud of. You can absolutely be incredibly successful in business when you're shameless. I just think that, you know, last year I said something similar about the Galaxy S5. People said I was dumb. And I think the Galaxy S5 now is not widely regarded.
Not at all.
And I think next year this won't be widely regarded. I think, like if you're going to be shameless, you better be successful, because otherwise all you are is shameless.
They're playing Apple's game against Apple, like, you know, they're playing right up against them rather than all the other things that distinguished that phone from what the iPhone was. So there was a lot of things that it wasn't, you know, with the battery, the, you know, all the other things that it had. And I think that going head to head with Apple is probably, I don't know, in my opinion, not probably the best business
solution. Best phone they could have made for Apple.
Well, while the S6 is not waterproof, maybe the Apple Watch will be. Apparently, visiting German Chancellor Angela Merkel, Tim Cook mentioned that he wears his Apple Watch constantly, even in the shower. You know, and Tim, there's no accidents with Tim. Obviously, he knows everything he says is going to be parsed.
Okay, but look who's saying that. He can afford to buy a new watch every single day.
That's what I was thinking.
I just call Johnny and say, showered with it again. Can you send me another one?
No, Leo, you shower, you peel off a new watch, you put it on. And
exactly.
What? He's like Jerry Lewis. All right, we know $350 for the sport one, which is not going to be the most beautiful one. It's going to have like a plastic band, right? Will it have? I don't remember. Can the sport one have the Milanese band?
It's unclear. All the bands are theoretically interchangeable, although I don't know if Apple specified whether they'll be technically interchangeable between collections. I think there is some, I was thinking earlier today about the reason for being for this, the Apple Watch Edition, why Apple would make a gold watch.
A $10,000 gold
maybe,
watch.
Maybe $10,000, maybe yeah. $5,000. I mean, who knows? But it's definitely gold, so it's going to be at least as pricey as gold is pricey. But it gets a lot of the coverage I've been looking at has been people guessing about prices, specifically about the Edition. When Vogue has had it on the cover or in an exhibit, it's been the Apple Watch Edition. I think the aluminum one, you say no one's going to want it, but I think sports people are going to love it. And I think people will like the idea that it's aspirational. Yes, there's a gold one out there sitting at the top getting a lot of attention, but you can have essentially the same watch for $350. It's that old, you know, everyone drinks the same Coke argument.
Well, don't get me wrong. I think it'll the least expensive one will outsell the others 3-1 or 4-1. But I think you're right. People will look at the other one and say, gosh, I wish I could afford that. And will they be happy with the sport? Will they be happy with the sport version?
Yeah,
I think the sport version is going to be the default for most people.
It is.
I think the stainless steel one is going to be the actual aspirational one, and I think the gold one is going to be. I just don't understand rich people at all.
I really think people are not like you and me.
I think that this is. I mean, I hope I'm not being indelicate in saying that you're crazy if you buy a gold Apple Watch, but I'm saying that there are people who understand. That there are people who can be moved up from, hey, the stainless steel one is made out of a harder material. It's probably longer lasting. It's a little bit classier than aluminum. There are very few people who can be talked up from stainless steel to gold or from sport to gold. The people who are going to be buying the gold watch are the people who I think would never have considered buying anything but the gold watch.
Right. So when Kevin Rose is here, Jason, for our 10th anniversary twit on April, what is that? April?
Something.
15th? I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it's the 19th.
19th?
Somewhere around there.
He'll be wearing one. We'll get to see one then.
I hope so.
Kevin's a watch
Yeah, he'll definitely
right?
be here.
And I think he can afford it. So no matter how much it costs.
Well, that's the kind of thing. The Apple Watch Edition is for people who want an Apple Watch but happen to wear gold watches.
Yeah,
and they think about
lovers.
A $10,000 watch the way someone with a Lamborghini thinks about gas.
Right. What do we know? Do we have any speculation? Here we are less than a week away. I think I really would love to get the stainless steel one, but do we know what that's going to cost? I don't want to pay $800 for it.
Unknown.
I'm getting it.
Yeah,
I'm
Apple can charge what they want. I mean, it's not based on anything other than what price they think the market will bear.
It's $1,000, isn't it? It's going to be $1,000, isn't it?
Between $500 and $1,000 seems like the range.
I think $600 or $700 seems like the right.
Depending on the band, too.
More than that.
Some bands will be more expensive.
That's what makes this so interesting, because especially when you get into the Edition, you feel as though I'm of two minds. I can see Apple serenely standing back while everybody speculates $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, and then having a price that's just under five, just so that it will seem not as expensive as it should, as it might have been, despite the fact that it's still a $5,000 electronic gadget that no one's really sure that they actually need yet.
iPad Gambit.
Exactly. Or I could see them saying, look, we're not going to take over the market for gold watches, but man, we can really elevate the entire brand if everyone knows that there's an $18,000 version of this watch. And I know someone, I don't have one and I don't know someone who has one, but my uncle works with somebody at his firm who has one, and boy, is it cool. And that's where I want to see the dry erase board where the numbers at Apple, where they're trying to figure out what to change, keeps going up and keeps going down. And you see all these like little ghost images of like two and then like three cross throughs on it.
Will the 42 millimeter cost more than the, what is the other size? 38?
38, yeah. And it sounds like a very small amount, but it's basically 10% of the size of that device.
So the gold watch is going to cost more.
And
obviously,
there's one thing people who are watch fanatics should notice, that Apple's measuring vertically, not horizontally, which I think is the norm in the industry. So it's 42 millimeters high, not wide.
Yeah.
Which makes
I was talking to watchmakers about showing the pictures and giving them impressions of when I wore it in September, and they really opened my eyes to, here's how little gold goes into the case of a watch like that. We really are talking like a pocket watch case. Mm-hmm. And it's really, they gave me numbers that were all over the map for how many grams or ounces of gold would have to go into a case like that. So that's why I throw up my hands.
We don't know what it's going to cost.
I absolutely have no idea. I thought I'd get some sort of a ballpark.
Well, you get a minimum if you know you knew it was going to be 8 grams of gold or whatever, and you'd get a minimum that for the gold alone.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see if there's, when you're thinking about the gold, I'd be really interested to see if there's any thought of the anti-theft kind of things that you see with the iPhone as well, with all of them.
A kill switch.
You know, some kind
activation
of kill switch.
Lock.
I mean, it knows who you are. So theoretically, unless you unlock it and make it available to someone else, it could just not work for anybody else.
Will the guts be the same?
Yes, it's the S1 chip.
Yeah.
It seems like the only difference again is the sapphire glass on the higher end models, on the stainless steel and the gold model.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to make any sense unless they can say that this is the exact same watch only in different cases. I don't think that they. I think that causes way more problems for them than they can solve.
Yeah, it's hard to develop for. It's hard to.
We don't know capacity yet, though. I mean, if there's a difference in the amount of flash storage in different models, but they haven't said anything about that yet.
I think that would even kill their whole argument if they say that the gold version of this watch does anything that the stainless steel or even the sport one doesn't do. Then I think they've lost their argument over the specialness over edition. That this is design. This is luxury, and even more than that, this is fashion. We're not charging you an extra $X thousand or $10,000 for an extra feature, for more RAM, the ability to have more apps resident, the ability to stream more music directly via Bluetooth from the watch. We are telling you that we have designed an item of sophistication and elegance, and that's why we are asking an extra $X thousand or $10,000 for it.
Exclusive Rolex watch face.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting. Anything else? Any surprises Monday?
I don't know if the watch is the only thing that they're going to talk about. You know, I think that there's a lot of things.
I'm telling you, it's not about the watch, that Peacock. It really is about an NBC deal for the Apple TV is really what this is all about. You guys missed the whole thing.
That would be a beautiful place to sneak that sort of thing in. But I thought about this last week and thinking, well, what could they really release? And they're rumors of an iPad Pro, and they wouldn't want that to be overshadowed by Apple Watch. There are rumors of a compact Retina Air. I think that, too, they would not want it to be overshadowed by the watch. It would have to be an announcement that is so simple that this is the only way to get people to pay that much attention to it, but not so big that
which would lean you towards the Apple TV.
I would expect some Beats news, maybe, because especially if the watch can play music.
Although the Beats stuff is supposed to be iOS 8.4, and we still haven't had 8.2 and 8.3 roll out yet.
Yeah.
And to Alex's point, the iPads traditionally had, or at least one year, they had Apple TVs with them. The original iPhone introduction had, you know, Apple TV.
Times have changed now. They have many more events than they used to. They're completely capable of having two events in 2 months. We know that from last year.
Would they do two spring events? That would be super interesting.
That would
they do one just for the Retina Air.
Yeah, like a Retina Air or some kind of the Pro model and an Apple TV thing between this and the watch. It also just shows Apple's ability to continue to do stuff. So I think that there's a statement that makes if they do that, and if they're looking at releasing in April, you're still looking at, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks of run, assuming that it's ready to ship relatively soon.
There was nothing in the spring. We had 2 years and nothing in the spring, and now we don't know where they're going to fit all these products.
Yep. Because the problem is that after the watch, and I think you have to give up 6 weeks, you know, before you do anything major. So, you know, you're now starting to push any other announcements into June, which might make sense when you're looking at WWDC, but otherwise, it seems like you might have to push some stuff out that you might want to get out earlier. You know, the pro, you know, the Air or the whatever they're going to call it, you know, the pro version of the iPad is going to, they're going to want to get that out in the spring because they want people to be thinking about it for the fall.
Tim Cook said some other things in Germany. It wasn't a public event. He was talking to employees. But he did say there'll be, it sounds like they're going to show a host of apps on Monday in addition to the watch itself. And that would make a lot of sense. These aren't apps that would be on the watch standalone, but these are phone apps that will have a watch presence. Panera Bread. Will an early Apple Pay partner is working to jump on the Apple bandwagon, according to Mark Gurman at 9to5Mac. Salesforce.com. Cook said is also developing. You've done some stuff for Salesforce.
We do a lot of stuff for Salesforce.
Yeah. They're also apparently doing software for the Apple Watch.
Yeah, Salesforce has been way ahead of iOS development from day one. I mean, and they have issued, I don't know if it's to every employee, but to many, many employees. I think all their sales staff and everything else all have iPads. And so this is an easy move for them. A lot of their development is all based around, you know, pushing the iOS. And this is a perfect solution for a sales, you know, salesperson. So I think that it makes a lot of sense for them.
Apparently,
it's going to be super interesting because.
Go ahead, Renee.
I was going to say the actionable notifications, as far as I understand, if you've implemented them iOS 8 style, that'll just work. So if you have a favorite communications app that sends you push notifications now that has like that reply or mark as read buttons, those should just work on the Apple Watch. It'll be able to pull those in and you can set them the way you like them. If you want to make a glance, you have to build that. That's like a little widget. It's like building a widget for the Today view. Notification center. So it's a little bit of work, but if you just want to have persistent information instead of information that comes and goes based on an alert system, you can do that. And then if you want more interactivity, you can build a WatchKit app, which is like a remote view that displays on the watch instead of on the phone. And that's even more work, but it gives you more capability on the phone. And I think the interesting thing will be to see apps figure out exactly what they need and how they need it. But Apple's been bringing in developers since before the event. We saw Twitter, I think maybe even Facebook at the event back in September, and they've been bringing developers in over and over again since then. So we should see some really well thought out, well honed stuff.
Apparently, Gurman says 100 developers have been invited to Cupertino to polish up their apps prior to the launch.
That's not a surprise because I've been seeing a lot of interfaces and a lot of people have been showing me interfaces and my notes back have been, this screen is a lot smaller than you think it is.
Yes.
I think it is going to be like developing for the iPad where there's so many, I did not meet a developer before the iPad came out who did not have some sort of like cardboard or resin model of the iPad that they were sticking screenshots into to get some sort of feel for what this will feel like to use. And I don't think that it's easy to figure out how an interface is going to interact with when you scale it down to this size. But that said, it's no accident that during the September event, one of the big things they were showing off was look at this huge constellation of circular app icons and look how easy it is to zoom through all of the different app icons you will be able to pick from when you launch this app. This is a very Apple approach to this sort of product. It's not about putting cards, notifications, and having Google Now sort of have a presence on your wrist. It really is. You have to have a targeted app platform. That's what Apple does so very well, and that's the strength of the things that they make.
And one of the big things that they did, and I think really smartly, is on if you go to Apple's developer stuff, they really try to help you see, you know, like this is a watch. People aren't going to be sitting there playing with it for hours. They're not going to be looking. Your app is going to surface to them when they need it. Either a notification will come up or they'll know they have to go and check some sort of delivery information or reference information. So make sure that your experience is not app-centric, but action-centric. And also make sure that there's handoff on the watch, for example. So anything that might be too long or too fussy, just send it back to the phone. If the watch is supposed to save people time, not be there to fuss with. So give that back to the watch. They can do it much more easily on a big screen.
The developers have been, this is funny, it was almost prophetic. The article Mark wrote about developers coming to Cupertino was from February 16th. He said it was as if something urgent was motivating Apple, like an event was imminent. The developers were traveling to Cupertino on an urgent timeline. They said that a sense of secrecy surrounds the meeting. The different developers in the room were not identified by name but by unique numbers so that other developers in the room wouldn't know what others are up to. Some leaks coming out of this, Mark's got them all. Developers in attendance called the watch's digital crown, quote, really nice. But one said that force touch takes time to get used to. Another developer said the Taptic Engine vibrating feature is not as impressive as expected.
I've heard good things about the Taptic. The force press, the problem with the force press, I think some people, it's supposed to be like a second click, but I think some people mistook it for a hamburger button and just thought they could put every function you wanted as soon as you hit that. Yeah. The screen would light up with buttons, which is something, you know, that's fiercely looked down upon.
Right. And I'm sure that one of the reasons those developers are there is to get spanked about stuff like that.
Well, and I think it's so important for Apple. I think this is the thing that a lot of people miss, is that it's so important to make sure that they come out of the gate with some great apps. They don't need thousands of great apps, but 100 of them would be enough to show some great examples, because that's going to set the pace for everyone else. I think that a lot of times when developers don't figure that out and just kind of throw it out there and hope that people develop for it, you know, you get a lot of really geeky stuff that doesn't really work, and then that affects the entire platform.
And I can verify employees are in the stores are getting training, because we've seen an abnormal number of retail employees in our studios in the last few weeks coming to Cupertino for training. What about the rumor that there's going to be a big kind of look change to the Apple store? Somebody pointed out that Johnny Ive said, well, I would never want to buy an Apple Watch unless I'm standing on carpet.
But not orange, brown carpet.
That way, the static electricity will destroy the device, and they have to buy another one for $12,000.
And Nico Damon in our chat room had a very good point. Probably no pre-orders, because this is something you're going to want to go into the store, right, and get it and
Oh, I think there's a lot of people that are ready to order it. I think that's.
But don't you? I mean, are they going to size it, or you just get a band and then you figure it out?
You size it yourself. They pop off. And
yeah.
You can,
okay. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'll buy it sight unseen.
It'll be interesting. I'm so interested to see what the packaging is like for the edition. I'm so interested to see what the sales experience is supposed to be like. If it really can be, you know, you walk in, you're met at the door by someone in a T-shirt holding a phone.
Welcome.
they swipe your credit card.
We've been expecting
you. Stand there for 5 seconds. They hand you a box.
Here's
they send you on your way.
Are they going to do it the same way they do the phones when the phones come out? You know, lines out front and the countdown. You go in and take all the watches.
I mean, there's something special about those events, especially for new products when they launch.
I know what's going to happen. I'm going to be number 4 in line, and I'm going to get to the front. And they're going to say, well, we've sold out of the $350 and the $5,000 version, but there's plenty of editions left. Would you like one?
Oh, well, if that's
whatever
all you
want,
got.
Leo, will be sold out.
I'll take it. I do that with the phone. You know, Sprint, I got to have Sprint. All right, I'll take
still
it.
Do you still have the blue rubber band? Okay, well, give me the gold edition with the blue rubber band.
You all going to buy it, right? You're all going to buy watches, right? You can buy the cheap ones, right? Because you're cheapskates.
I know some people who want to get multiple ones. They want to get like an addition to wear out fancy. And once they're buying the addition, an extra $350 for the sport to wear to the gym is nothing for them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
One for each wrist, Rio.
There's a power reserve mode, apparently, according to the New York Times, that says, well, when you get low on power, we'll continue to show the time. But so that's good, because sometimes people do wear wristwatches to know what time it is.
That's crazy talk.
The code name was apparently Gizmo, which sounds delightful.
I like Gizmo. Like that, yeah. This is from that uninterested public story. What else?
People were saying that's because you can't feed it after midnight or can't get it. I think any allusions to gremlins is just incidental.
Anything else to report? I mean, this is the traditional, and I apologize because I know people go, The last show before an Apple event, all it is sitting around going, what are they going to say? What are they
going
to say?
I was going through my photos, and I saw one with the Hey Siri interface, and I'd kind of forgotten about that. But the idea that I'll just be able to lift the watch up and say, Hey Siri, what's the weather? I mean, that sort of thing to me is much better than plotting, kind of poke around.
Does it have a speaker on the watch?
Yep. No. You can do phone calls on the watch.
You can?
Yep. It's like it's better not to do them for long periods of time. Just hand them off to your phone, but you can do them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I have a piece that's in with my editor right now that's just basically in anticipation of the watch announcement next week. Here is everything that I've learned in over 6 months of wearing a smartwatch every day. And really, the ability to just not even work with an interface, but just raise your thing up your wrist and just please do this thing for me. Wait 3 seconds for it to acknowledge, okay, I'm doing that thing for you, and then put your wrist back down. That in itself is just a killer feature. I use that at least 2/3 of the times I use this watch. When I'm not just checking the time, it's giving it a voice command.
So Dick Tracy.
I do find it amazing how quickly they sucked all the energy out of the Mobile Congress.
Isn't that funny? Good timing,
Apple.
They
do it over and over and over
again. Nice job.
Yeah, they do it over. Yeah. I don't think there's no accident there. They have iPhoto, or I'm sorry, iPhone billboards.
Shot on iPhone
and they've
6.
Announced something that they won't tell you about and everything mm-hmm. else on the days that it really mm-hmm. takes a lot of energy. It's got to be very frustrating to be in Barcelona.
We're also learning how Apple hid the Apple Watch, including making Samsung like cases for their employees to wear. Those are gone, by the way. We now know when you see somebody wearing an Apple Watch, it's obvious. But they wanted to make them look like Galaxy Gear smartwatches, which is pretty funny.
The last person you're going to look at is the person who actually bought a Galaxy Gear. So that was brilliant.
Oh, God, that guy. Don't be that guy. Also, international sales. Like, and I know our audience, a large...
There'd be a great ad.
What?
There'd be a great ad with Rob Lowe. The Apple Watch versus the Samsung. Don't be the Samsung guy.
Yeah, it doesn't even run Android. It runs something other than Android.
Tizen. Apple Watch may be available internationally quickly, which is good news, I think, for a lot of people.
Woohoo.
Including Rene Ritchie. According to unnamed employees at this German event, Tim said that the Apple Watch would be available in April outside the U.S.,
best press briefing ever.
Yeah, this because he's in Germany, you can assume Germany's one of those countries. I don't think there's any reason it couldn't be available. I don't even know. I guess it would have to get the equivalent of FCC approval in every country, but it's not as complicated as...
It's usually manufacturing. Like the iPad, I think it took 30 days to go international, maybe 60 days, but it was manufacturing constraints. And the Apple Watch, the hardware, as far as I know, has been ready for a while. Right. So that's why I'm not too worried about the software taking time, because the more time that takes, the more Apple Watches they can make, and hopefully right. that means more countries they can ship.
One analyst now saying 15 million in 2015. The leak was that the Apple's making will have 5 million. Ready. And we agreed last week that the supply would be constrained. Unless...
Josh Centers from Tidbits did the math on the amount of gold it would take to hit the Wall Street Journal's numbers, and I think it was most of the gold that was currently on the market.
You're so, kidding. Yeah,
like, we'll see how that...
What?
How those
really?
Estimates hold up.
Yeah. Well, they're not all... Look, okay, what is the percentage? It's going to be 75% sport. It's going to be the 24.9% stainless steel. And 0.01 or 0.1% addition, right? It's going to be a tiny fraction.
The Wall Street Journal had it at 1/6, I think. Which
one sixth? No.
Yeah. No, that's rubbish.
That's pretty high. Yeah. It depends on how much it costs. But if it's at $1,000 or $1,500, maybe, which I think is still pretty high price to pay for a watch. But at $6,000 or $5,000, I think you're definitely looking at.
Yeah, there were estimates of a million in the first 10%. Quarter, which sounded ridiculous.
A million additions?
Yeah, 850,000 to a million editions in the first quarter, which sounds pretty.
I mean, I could see a surge at the very beginning.
Yeah,
because I'm trying
a few
to get
dozen my head, right away.
I'm trying to get my head in the space of somebody who would pay that much money for a device like this, and I'm thinking that I want to be seen as one of these people who not only can afford this, but I also have the connections to find the store that had these for sale and sent one of my assistants and. Beat him or her savagely until they found me the one with the serpentine band that I wanted. I think that's going to be an early sort of thing. It's going to be interesting to see 6 to 8 to 10 months later. Is it still going to be a desirable thing to have? But yeah, it's ridiculous to think that one out of every six of these is going to be an edition watch. Anything is possible, and I'm prepared to admit that, wow, I did not expect that. Boy, was I wrong. But I would like not to believe that I live in a world where one out of six of these watches, when there's a really beautiful stainless steel one and an affordable aluminum one, would be the solid gold one.
It's going to be like Ferrari. You're going to have to buy the midnight blue first to get on the list to buy the red one, to get on the list to buy the loop.
How long is it going to take for somebody to come up with some sort of like a vinyl product that will let you turn an aluminum one into like a gold one?
I think you can anodize them, right? You can anodize them.
Yeah, you're going to see them on the award shows. You're going to see the Hollywood royalty will be wearing them, right?
Kim Kardashian day one.
But, you know, I have to revise my numbers.
Keep these off the Kardashians. We will give you $1 million each to never wear one of these watches.
The gold iPhone's code name was, the informal code name was Kardashian.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
One of my friends actually anodized an iPhone 6, an iPhone 5 for Kim Kardashian, a gold one. Oh. And she was using it so much that they started, you know, jokingly calling it the Kardashian inside Apple.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. I actually have to revise my numbers because even 1 in 1,000 editions would, I think, be very high. Do you think it'll be? Well, anyway, we'll see.
I can't get, but 1 in 6.
How many Mac Pros compared to MacBook Airs are there?
My Mac Pro, by the way, slows down a lot. That's making.
What are you doing on it, Leo?
I don't know. Nothing. I'm kind of mad. I get a lot of beach. I'm going to have to rebuild or something.
iTunes doesn't count.
At least the Mac Pro and the Mac Air are two very different machines. You could say that I need a Mac Pro for what I do. This is why, I hope I'm not speaking so clumsily as to make fun of anybody who's interested in the edition. I'm just saying that I am so confused by trying to picture who would want to buy this as opposed to somebody else that I have to realize that I have no idea. I have to basically say that I acknowledge my humility here, that I have no idea who's going to buy this.
I think it's people who just buy gold watches, Andy. I think they just buy gold watches. It's just different worlds.
But even then,
Kevin Rose, Kim Kardashian, Kanye
Kevin
West,
Mitchell.
This is not a representative sample. I know, but I've spoken to about a dozen people I know and friends of friends I know who think of nothing of spending $15,000 on a watch they really like, and there is just not a lot of interest from those people in this watch. The things they like about expensive watches is not, well, I just want to have the same thing that everybody else has, but I want it in gold.
By the way, this just in. 275 pounds of gold were stolen yesterday in an armored truck heist worth $4.8 million. I think we know where that gold
is on its way to Cupertino.
Gold looks so good, though, doesn't it? Somebody said, just buy the sport watch and a gold bar and you'll be ahead.
Exactly. Sounds like a classic Joker caper to me.
Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use invoicing software that I used. Freelancing is tough. Being a small business, tough. If you have to do all the bookwork, including the invoices, that end of the month doesn't look good. It's just a pain in the butt to fire up Word or Excel or Numbers or whatever it is you use and print them and mail them and all that stuff. And then you got to keep an eye on them. And as accounts age and they get behind, you got to make the embarrassing phone call. FreshBooks solves all of this. First of all, it makes your invoices beautiful, professional, easy to send out, and easy to pay, which is really a big deal. In fact, on average, FreshBooks customers get paid 5 days faster because it turns out your client doesn't mind paying you. It's as much of a pain in the butt for them to do the bookwork as you. So if they see that pay me button right there on the invoice, they go, okay. FreshBooks integrates with all your apps, Google Apps, PayPal, Stripe, MailChimp, Fundbox, Zen Payroll. They've got an API, too, which means anybody can develop more apps. That's why there is really a rich and growing ecosystem of FreshBooks users, FreshBooks customers. They accept all the top credit cards. And if a client should be slow to pay, no matter, because FreshBooks will automatically send out reminders, and it just eliminates that difficult conversation. FreshBooks scales with your business, too. It's easy to add clients, to add projects, to add staffing. You'll spend less time on paperwork, freeing an average of 2 days a month to focus on the work you love. And if you do time and hours, the FreshBooks apps make it easy to add that, to track your time and add it to the invoice. You can also snap photos of your receipts so you can do your expenses. It's just such a lifesaver. An award-winning team for supporting you. The best software. You're going to love it, and you're going to try it free for 30 days right now when you go to FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. If they do, I think there's a place on the form where they say, how'd you hear about us? Make sure you tell them MacBreak Weekly, will you? FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. We love them. Always very grateful to FreshBooks. All right, enough about the watch. We're all excited. Live coverage once again. Monday, the Apple stream begins at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC. We will be here shortly before that with me and Andy, and I imagine there'll be quite a few others on our team as we watch with interest to see what Apple announces. And then a very special MacBreak Weekly 1 week from today. Renee and Serenity will be in studio with us. and we'll be figuring out what it all means. They're not going to have them available there. You're not going to like walk away with one. That would be, I want you to.
Some people were talking about that because Apple, I've never gotten a pre-release review unit from Apple, but it always seems like those are a week out. I don't know if Apple's ever given review units to anything a month out.
That'd be cool.
That would be pretty long. They've done it before where, again, there is a meeting on site in which you get stuff a couple weeks before. They sometimes have done stuff where you meet them in a neutral city, so to speak. So I think either some people are going to be leaving with early hardware, or some people are going to be making trips to New York and or San Francisco in the near future.
I was a very jolly boy this morning when my...
I'm telling you, Renee, make sure you join whatever airline's frequent flyer program.
You'll be back.
Just in case.
You'll be back. I would strongly suggest if you're in the public beta for Yosemite that you get over to your updates and see what you got. I got up this morning. My Mac Pro said, hey, 10.10.3. It's in beta still, but the public beta, and it includes photos. So Serenity wrote a nice article about this, including how to get it if you're not already in the public beta program. And now we know a little bit more about photos. What's new, Renee, in Apple's photos, which is basically replacing Aperture, as far as we can tell?
Yeah, it's replacing iPhoto and Aperture. It's sort of like an iPhoto Plus. It doesn't have all the features that Aperture has, and Apple's not pretending that it does. It might get extensibility, you know, photo plugins at some point. There's none in it right now.
I played with it a little bit before I came in this morning. It felt very much like iPhoto.
Yeah, it's based very similarly on the Photos app for iOS, so much so that they're using UXKit, which is sort of like a bridging framework to actually develop it, which is really interesting. But if you take the iOS version of Photos that you're used to and you add more advanced, a few more advanced editing features, and of course the scale and power of the Mac to it, then you'll have a pretty good idea what you can do with Photos for OS X.
When I launched it, it asked me, do you want to import your iPhoto library? I said yes. It did that fairly quickly. And I don't know. What happens? Do you lose any data if you're using Aperture and it imports your Aperture of data?
It'll do both. It'll import it, and it's also very space conservative when it does it because it references the existing files. But once you've imported them, you can still go back and use iPhoto or use Aperture, but the changes you do to those will not be reflected in photos.app and vice versa.
So it's not a common database anymore.
No. It's brought in, but then they remain two separate things. Just for people who want to play with it but don't want to commit to it yet.
Yeah. That may change on release. We don't know. When will release be?
Spring. They said this spring, which to me sounds again like an April sort of thing. Yeah. And they also advise that you can have multiple libraries on Photos. You can do the same sort of alt click. I think it's alt and open it. But if you want to reconcile your libraries first, do that in Aperture before you move them over.
Okay, that's good to know. And your stacks, projects, and events will be converted to albums, so you don't lose any organization.
Your ratings become keywords, which will irk some people, but it's a ratings-free world in Photos.
Oh, that's interesting.
So like one star will actually be one star as a keyword in that photo.
Oh, God, that's really annoying. Okay. And then you have an option, at least in the beta, to turn on iCloud Photo Library.
Yes, also in beta.
Do you recommend that?
You have to go all in. My photo stream is not going anywhere. Apple said that my photo stream, which is the one that does the 1,000 photos or 30 days, is going to stay available. So if you're used to using that, you can. What iCloud Photo Library does is it gives you nearline capability. So if it's not your main photo library, any MacBook Air or other Mac you have or any iOS device can download optimized versions of the photos that you use most frequently or your favorites and leave the rest in the cloud and then bring those to you on demand. And that means that you won't have your entire device clogged up with photos anymore. So it has some advantages. It's much more stable than iCloud has been traditionally. It's based on CloudKit, which is a very stable framework. But it is beta, so don't throw your main library in there yet.
Too late.
If you do it everywhere, because otherwise it won't sync.
Too late. Yeah. So now I'm logging, and I don't have 10.3.3 on this laptop, and I don't have, obviously, iPhotos, but I do have the Photos beta in my iCloud. Should I open it?
It will not blow up. Nothing will happen.
Will I lose everything that I've worked on? Oh, I see. It's preparing my library. And this will work the same on iOS?
Yep. So, and a lot of people are amazed because you really do have all your photos with you on every device. It, of course, depending on how much iCloud storage you have. But if you throw, you know, a terabyte at it and just put all your photos in there, they really are just on every device. And every edit you make is non-destructive and sync between every device. And every favorite
That's
is the same.
That's pretty awesome, actually.
It is. I'm using it on everything, and it's working terrifically well. I know some people have had a few issues with it here or there, and Apple's following up with them, but it's been great for me. I don't even worry about my photos where they are anymore.
Well, I don't worry about the butt photos anymore because you delete them in one place, they delete them across the board, right? I hope.
Just remember, Leo, it puts them in the deleted photos album for 30 days.
So I know, it stays
sure
in
there.
Yeah, don't look in there.
Yeah, and then delete them again.
Then delete them.
Leo, can we get some clarification? Are you talking about photos taken by sitting down with your butt?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Photos of your butt.
Who would take photos of their behind?
There's a selfie stick for that.
Well, let's do a Google image search.
Yeah.
We might get some hits.
Oopsies. Apparently didn't delete them everywhere. Okay, so good to know.
It hasn't been as fast.
Jason, close your eyes. Only Jason saw that.
Photo library hasn't been as fast as syncing for me as PhotoStream was. It sometimes takes a little while for the sync to happen. Yeah.
But, this is kind of cool. So now I'm working on the web in here. Can I edit this?
I don't believe there's any editing tools available on the web
yet. No, I don't see. I see.
Upload script.
I can make it bigger or smaller. I can hard it. I can download it. So if I had photos on here, I could modify it. That's cool. Yeah, and I actually think I cropped this, but maybe I didn't. Maybe I didn't save the crop.
And I'm not sure if it respects all. Like again, it's all very beta. I'm not sure if the web viewer honors all the edits that you make.
How much is a terabyte, let's say, of storage?
I forget the price. I think it's $9.99 for half a terabyte and $19.99 for a terabyte. But I would have to double check
a month.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing is they're still not competitive at all with anyone else when it comes to, there's a few niche boutique players that target specific needs, but if you're talking about the Dropboxes or the Google Drive or the Microsoft.
Do you think they'll ever
have
cloud editing? I mean, Google does. Aviary does it. Is there?
They have iWork, and the iWork stuff just went public. Anybody who wants to now, whether you have an Apple device or not, can get a gigabyte of storage and use iWork on the cloud for free. Mm. So, I mean, never say never.
Right. iWork doesn't have any photo editing yet, but what you're pointing out is that you could. Yeah. And optimization does what? Does it reduce the resolution?
Yeah, so if you want to on your main Mac or if you have a lot of room, you can make sure that you keep the original version of a file, even if it's a raw photograph, on the cloud and on the device. But if you want to keep storage minimums, storage requirements low, you can optimize it. And that means that it'll bring down a screen size resolution version to keep the original on the cloud for you. And it'll do more moving stuff around back and forth.
And I Serenity checked, and when you do delete the photo locally, it says delete from all devices. This photo will delete from all your devices. There's no way to delete it just locally.
We're still following up on that. They very much want to manage it for you. So when you have something like when you have a nearline system, and it's a word that you use in databases a lot, but it's not consumer driven first. And Apple did this with iTunes Match as well. They basically are going to determine the photos you access the most, the ones you favorite, and the ones you do more recently, and put those on your phone and leave the other ones in the cloud. And they don't want you messing with that sort of algorithm by arbitrarily deleting things that they're trying to download or upload in the background. It's like a Fusion drive. They're trying to manage all that for you. It's almost like saying, I want to delete this from the SSD, but not the HDD in my Fusion drive. To them, it's one logical volume.
Got it. PhotoStream has not gone away. Is this going to replace it?
Maybe eventually, but Apple said they're going to keep my photo stream around for a long time to come.
Oh, all right. And that family sharing, the photo sharing is nice. That feature will continue then as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. And then I highly recommend iMore.com because Serenity's got a review of all the editing tools and some great pictures of her roller derby career.
She's doing a column on it every Tuesday. She's doing another aspect of the photography.
Good timing. I like Tuesday. Yeah. And you could still print books and calendars, not in iOS, but you could do it in the desktop app.
Yeah, the photos app for Mac. And I have a whole bunch of new things, including squares that are, like the Instagram generation of photos.
Square prints. That's kind of cool. Yeah.
And they have a new feature that's really cool. It'll just automatically, you set a size, and it'll automatically fit all photos to that size on one of the edges.
Oh, neat. That's neat.
I have to say, for anyone who hasn't printed books, and I've done a couple of them,
they're good.
They are big family,
And Apple,
they give you a lot of credit for those. It's so easy.
Apple contracts with somebody to do this, but they're really good.
It's so easy to throw one together. You know, I've done ones for birth, you know, when my kids were born. I've done ones on for vacation. And you take a bunch of photos and literally, I'd be in the evening, I'd throw them a couple more pages together while I'm on vacation. That's what I do. And then you're done and you send it out before you get on the plane. And by the time you get home, like a day or two later, there's the book. You
know, it's great, isn't it? I love it. And I have tried other services that print books, and the quality varies widely. So,
and it's more clunky. I have to say that there's just none that are as easy. And I've tried a bunch of them because I wanted, you know, test them, and haven't found one as smooth and as easy. But if you haven't done it and you do a lot of stuff in iPhoto, I would definitely suggest printing a little one, and you'll get kind of addicted.
Yeah. Yeah. And the prints are just, the quality is just superb. I used to know who they use for their, I don't know who they use now, but I used to.
And I haven't done any prints at all, just books. So I don't know how the prints turn out.
Well, it's the same. I mean, the book is really just bound prints.
Right.
So,
I know I sent some to my mom and she was happy.
Oh, they're
great. She's like, it's not a real photo until it's printed. I sent her one of those things, those pieces of paper.
We tried some, you know, I think Lisa had a coupon for some, I can't remember the name of it, some other photo book printing service. So it was just very disappointing. It felt like it was all low res images and stuff. Yeah. Use the Apple stuff if you've got
it. It'd be great if there was some sort of service that would say, we will give you the first one way below cost. Because the thing that made me always timid about that stuff is that the minimum buy-in is something like $28, like $30 for like a hardcover book. And so many times I'll get prints back, even if I just spend $1.80 for a print. It's like, okay, that's not as intense as it was on my monitor. It's not really what I wanted.
It's so disappointing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't want to spend – I just spent $35 on something that I really just have to kind of chuck in the trash now.
You know what we've been doing is metal prints. And really, they're not printed on metal, I don't think. Or maybe they are. I don't know. But they're great.
They're just metal.
The glass ones are nice, too.
And glass, yeah.
Yeah.
How are they doing that? Are they printing out a film and then putting it on the glass? Or?
I don't know.
I really like them. It's fun.
Because people are used to seeing photos on glass now, so it's kind of a weird juxtaposition of the real world and the virtual world.
Metallic prints really look great. And so when we have a special photo, we'll print it on metal. That way, after the zombie apocalypse, something of us will live on.
You can use it as a weapon in the zombie apocalypse, Leo. You can cut a zombie with that.
You totally can.
But then crack addicts are going to break into your house to steal your pictures to reclaim the metal for recycling.
No, that's the Mad Max universe. That's a different universe.
Zombie Mad Max.
Zombie Mad Max. No!
Well, it's just when you hear them pulling the siding off the walls, then outside, then you know it's time to hide the photos.
Get the photos.
Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. If you're ready, you're getting ready. You want to be trying to get some money together so you can buy yourself that nice edition watch, or maybe you see a phone you'd like or a tablet. Time to go to Gazelle.com. They're the folks who give you top dollar for your existing phone, so you can buy a new one. They buy iPhone. They even buy broken iPhones and iPads. They'll also buy Samsung. They'll buy Blackberries. They'll buy Surface tablets, Google tablets. Pretty broad range of things. Go to Gazelle.com. You know, there's no obligation, so it's easy to find out what your stuff's worth. In fact, it's guaranteed that price for 30 days. So you can even, you know, take your time deciding. Maybe waiting till, I don't know, an Apple Watch comes out. How long before they buy Apple Watches on the Gazelle site, I wonder? Probably pretty quickly. The neat thing is you can not only trade in your old stuff, get top dollar. And by the way, they turn it around fast. They pay the shipping. If you forget to wipe your data or you can't because it's broken, they'll do that for you. Don't worry. You can get a PayPal credit, which is almost instant. You can get a check mailed to you. But the best thing to do, I would get the Amazon gift cards because they bump those up by 5%. And then after you sell all your stuff, time to buy the new stuff. Gazelle now sells the best, the cream of the crop on the trade-ins with their certified pre-owned products. There's two categories, certified like new, which is new, basically. Somebody got something and they never used it or whatever. And then there's certified good. It may show a little gentle signs of wear, but you get even better savings on those. And one thing I know, all the devices of either quality, but put through that rigorous 30-point inspection. So they are working fully. They're in every respect doing great. And you, of course, have a 30-day risk-free return policy. So there's no risk involved. And if you lose a device, you don't want to go out and buy it again for full retail. Go to Gazelle. Gazelle.com. They buy, they sell, they're called Gazelle. What's your iPhone worth? Take a minute and go to gazelle.com and find out. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Andy Yannotko from the Chicago Sun-Times, from the Pixel Corps, all the way from Rwanda. Thank you for doing that. What time is it in Rwanda, Alex Lindsay?
It's not bad. It's 10:30.
At night?
It's in the evening. At night, yeah. Yeah, so it's not that bad. And
thanks for staying up late with us.
My pleasure. I was tempted to. These are brand new, by the way, in Rwanda. These are the little 4G modems.
Ooh.
And so,
how fast are they?
15 megs down and 20 megs up.
You look really good. What are you on? Are you on a landline?
No, I'm on a hard line. Yeah, the school has a pretty good connection.
Yeah, you look always. You look fabulous. It's as if he's like Johnny Appleseed for bandwidth. Wherever Alex goes, bandwidth improves.
Well, you have to understand that it's a requirement if it's around MacBreak that I have to know where the good bandwidth is on Tuesday. You know, when I was in Rome a couple of weeks ago, I made them install an Ethernet jack into the hotel room because it was
OMG. That's what I said.
Well, I said on the website it says hard line, and you didn't, and there's no hard line here. So some guy came in and put it in, but it was, but yeah, so it's not by accident. We picked carefully.
Apple Pay fraud? One wouldn't think it's possible. Experts say it's a haven for rampant credit card fraud, but this is the Register writing.
I spent most of yesterday trying to
track that story down. What's going on?
It was not just the Register. Recode did a story about that. The Guardian, Wall Street Journal just put their version live. So basically what's happening is there's a standard social engineering attack that people use on banks. It's either identity theft or they get fraudulent cards approved. And then they go on buying sprees. The difference now is that they're taking those cards and adding it to Apple Pay and then going on their buying spree. So Apple Pay is tangential.
That's not Apple Pay's fault.
No. In fact, Apple Pay is so secure, the only way you can attack it currently that we know of is to trick a bank into authorizing you. And the problem is that, you know, Apple will send the device ID, the last four numbers of your credit card, your telephone number, your last few transactions, and other information from your account in an encrypted way to the bank that already has that information, but they want you to be able to compare the device information, what the people are saying basically, with what they have. And the bank can check that and they can choose to immediately approve it, demand a call, demand a visit. They have all sorts of things. And some banks just chose not to do anything with it. So they were subject to, again, the same kind of fraud attacks that they have with everything else, but Apple Pay makes for a better headline.
So this is really BS. In fact, at the end of the article, they point out that every other mobile payment system, including currency and Samsung's Loop Pay, will have exactly the same potential risks. Because it's not the Apple Pay that's been cracked. It's the bank's authentication process, which sucks.
They're not using the resources available to them the same way they don't do it if you fill in a form and send it to them and they send you a card without checking it.
You're no more liable than you would be for anything, for a credit card either. I mean, it's the same thing. If the bank has bad, you know, lacks security, it doesn't make you more liable because it's Apple Pay.
And there was a suggestion that you could buy more expensive things because retailers trust Apple Pay more. But again, the retailers can escalate the same way they can with any purchase. If it's out of pattern, they can require a phone call. They can require a check, a physical card check. And they do that already. It's just they have to make sure that they follow those practices.
So it really comes from this one guy, Cherian Abraham, a mobile payment specialist, who says fraud enabled by Apple Pay is rampant.
And the banks were shocked, according to one article, shocked that this was possible.
Shocked.
Because they've never seen anything like that before, fraud, you know, and this specific kind of fraud.
Criminal gangs are handing smartphones to low-ranking members who use them to commit fraud, particularly at Apple stores. So it could be that crooks are buying high-end iPhones with it could be. Not. This is just like, I'll just make something up. That crooks are buying high-end iPhones with embedded payment features in order to further the fraud.
The thing that's irksome about this, though, is that Apple published all the stuff that they do for Apple Pay to make it secure, and it doesn't look like any of the articles just did the basic research of looking at the website before publishing.
Well,
and
you
scares
know,
people.
Yeah. They're all pointing out that Apple Pay has not been cracked.
Yeah,
it's not
absolutely
a flaw in Apple Pay. Yes. Although you might be able to dazzle, I think maybe you dazzled the clerk by, wait till you have an edition watch. You should be able to buy anything.
Yeah.
Let me just pass that over your silly terminal.
Also, NFC transactions have been around for a couple of years. So this is a battle-hardened technology. And if there were a flaw, and they all use pretty much the same system, even Samsung's new Samsung Pay system uses pretty much the same system where you get a burner credit card number every time you use it. So that's not the weak point of this whole thing. As usual, the weakest point in any financial services thing is the dope at the end of the customer service line.
Right.
Say, we'll send you a new. Okay, I'm sorry. Would tomorrow be fast enough to activate your new account linked to this your old bank account?
And again, you're not liable. The bank is liable, particularly for that dopey. I'm trying to find the 18-page. Maybe they didn't put it online. The 18 pages of beauty shots of the Apple Watch in Vogue. Did they not?
There's a few.
They're just a few.
Yeah.
I guess I'll have to buy a Vogue. Isn't it interesting that all of this stuff is in Vogue? Like Vogue.
Well, there
China
was Kendra Schwapnell in Self magazine showing it in a sporty context. Yeah.
Boy, they know their marketing.
Well, it shows like one of the interesting things about the watch to me, and not to digress back to that topic, is that there's multiple ways. Like you have the sport version.
Right.
There are a lot of people who love athletic watches and they get dive watches and all these different things. And they're appealing to that. And some people like high-end watches and some people just want notifications and some want authentication. There's a lot of different ways it could appeal to different people.
Yeah, yeah. Apple passes Samsung in Q4 smartphone sales. This is some good news. Boy, this is mind-boggling. This is global, by the way. 1.9 billion mobile phones were sold in Q4. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Overall in 2014. Okay, that's a little better. Not in a quarter, but in all 12 months. That's pretty impressive.
That's a crazy number.
Isn't that 1.9 billion?
Almost one out of three people in the world bought a phone.
But most of those, I'm willing to bet, are not high-end expensive phones.
Right.
Most of those are the inexpensive phones. Microsoft's been focusing on those with its Windows phone market. You mentioned, Renee, the Moto, the new second-generation Moto E, which is only $159, unsubsidized, and is really pretty much everything the Moto X was.
Yep.
Not everything.
The Moto G and the Moto E are great in that they remind us that premium smartphones are premium smartphones,
right. And
that you can get by just fine with a Moto G and not miss a whole lot of what you'd be getting with a better phone.
I'd be comfortable with the E, especially if it's your first phone or a kid or you don't have a lot of money. The E
compared to what you used to get,
yeah, for $150 bucks, it gives you an off. This is the second generation,
and once you stop. Just simply being I have an account with Verizon or account with AT&T. I simply replace my phone every 2 years and I use the data plan that they give me. Once you start shopping around, you'll be shocked at how much money you're spending that you don't necessarily have to be spending.
Right.
If you go on like T-Mobile or some other different plan that are aggressively trying to get people to break out of like 10-year-old service habits, not contracts, but service habits, and get new customers.
So last in the fourth calendar quarter, the holiday buying quarter, globally 367.5 million devices were sold. Of those, as we know, Apple sold 75 million, Samsung only 73 million.
It's a big quarter for Apple, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's such an aberration. It's an aberration. It's possible that that's an aberration because there is so much pent-up demand for pent-up consumer expectation for a larger screen iPhone.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how the iPhone 7 sells. Assuming they're making one, of course, that is an unannounced product.
going into the hot tubs, Andy.
Market share, phones sold up to that point, including that quarter, Samsung still has a wide lead, 29.5% to Apple's 17.8%. Lenovo 5.8%, Huawei, which is sold pretty much mostly in China, I think 5.7%, Xiaomi 2%, and others, the biggest category 39.3%. There are lots of other people in this business, even though we don't see them.
And market share is just one metric. I remember when Palm priced the Centro to sell, and every one of those cost them money, and it was almost debilitating when they sold a large number of them. Apple makes such good profits that even if they don't have a market share advantage, they have a huge profit share advantage, and they might count customer satisfaction or web usage or some other metric just as highly.
I'm sorry, I apologize. I was reading the 2013 market share. I completely reversed now. So that was a year ago. This year, Apple 20% of the market. Samsung 19% of the market, just a few half a percent dividing the two for the quarter. That's right.
Yeah,
but that includes all units. I don't know if that's units sold. Oh, maybe it is. Yeah, it's units sold.
It's hard because not everyone declares units the same way. Not everyone breaks them out. Some are sell in, some are sell through. It's really a mess.
Right.
Yeah, it's even more impressive when you start to you realize that the Android phone market isn't one market the way that the iPhone market is. It really is about 3, 4, or 5. There are people who are buying Android 2.3 practically disposable phones. There are people who are buying service phones, and then there are the people who are buying the iPhone like really big impressive smartphones. So it's hard to really break it down into market share that way. It's any way you slice it's hard to find a way to look at Apple's sales of iPhones and not say, nope, that's exactly the way that I would like to be in business.
Yeah, no kidding. For the whole year 2014, Samsung sold 307,597,000 units. Apple sold 191 million iPhones in 1 year. Wow. Lenovo 81,000, Huawei 68. I'm sorry, 81 million. Huawei 68 million. LG 57 million. But still, the little guys sold far more.
That right there that you were just showing off just illustrates what a bad year it was for Samsung, right? 30% market share in 2013. 24 a year later. And all of that went into the other category, which, right. You know.
Well, that's a good point. Jason Howell makes a very good point. Others did well. You know, it's the low-end market, though, that really is beefing up
market
share.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah, Xiaomi and...
Yeah. Well, not even Xiaomi.
It'll be interesting to see.
Things like
it'll be interesting to see what...
What is that? The Yep phone or whatever. There's some very
local entrants.
They're very small phone companies all over the world. If you talk about operating system in 2014, 1 billion Android devices were sold, and of course 191 million iOS devices, 35 million Windows phones, 7.9 million. Blackberries in 20.
The more interesting thing to me is to look at how many total units sold across all platforms and across all sellers. Basically, 244. Basically, look at the number on the left and the number on the right. That a lot of people came into this marketplace at the same time.
Yeah.
And when you look at, it's kind of impressive that Samsung did not pick up any of those people. Those sales were pretty much. It's not just the percentage went down. If you look at the number of how many they sold, lots of new people came into the market, and Samsung got almost none of the phones they released in 2014. Yeah.
They went from 300 million to 307 million.
Yeah,
but boy, a lot of phones sold. 1.24 billion phones sold in 2014.
It's hard to wrap your head around the idea of 1.2 billion of anything being manufactured and sold that is not like a cheeseburger or, you know, a Coke, a can of Coke.
Yeah. Wow. It's a good business. Nice work if you can get it. I'll tell
you. Should've done that, Leo.
I made
the wrong choice by choosing to manufacture words and ideas instead of actual handsets.
It's hard to charge for words and ideas. That's the problem.
Voice for them.
In enterprise, iOS 73% enterprise share in Q4, Android dropping to 25%, Windows Phone flat at 1%. That's kind of interesting, isn't it? Now, that's global, yeah. So 73% of global device activations in enterprise in Q4 were iOS. Isn't that interesting? Sure. Is that the IBM deal, or is that just the way it's
been? There's an IBM deal.
Yeah, it's why there's an IBM deal, yeah.
Well, and I think it's interesting because I think when this started, there was a real question of whether Apple was going to be able to get into the enterprise. There was a lot of resistance to it, and people weren't sure if this was going to be a successful market for them. And they've obviously turned it around to the point where BlackBerry is in the other category.
BlackBerry.
Historically, Apple's not done well in enterprise. BYOD changed everything.
Yeah, when IT buyers are no longer the ones responsible for decision making.
Right. When the end users get to choose, they choose iOS.
That's a Ben Thompson's famous thing about buying for experience and not buying for checklist.
Yeah, yeah. I had somebody in the studio the other day, and he had a BlackBerry Bold, as well as a more recent Samsung, I think a Note 4. And I said, what are you doing in the Bold? He's like, work gave it to me. Is this work phone?
When I flew out there last time, I was in the plane and all the seats around me were taken over by a company that was flying out for meetings, and all of them had Lenovo laptops running Windows 7 and BlackBerry Z30s, but they all also had iPhones, which was a really odd combination.
Yeah. Apple launching a new ad campaign saying, our camera phone is the best. Shot on iPhone 6. You want to see the pictures? They are gorgeous and hard to believe they're captured with a phone.
But they're amazing. A lot of those are really amazing photographers.
I mean, that is gorgeous.
That was with
VSCOcam.
Yeah, I've always thought that the real strength of the iPhones, particularly the iPhone 6 as a camera platform, isn't necessarily the imager, but everything around it, like how fast you can launch the app, how fast it takes pictures, the way that it puts features into the camera app that are actually meaningful, because these aren't as impressive, because you can basically give any professional photographer, I'm sure you could even give them a Moto G and say, we need some great demo photos, and they'll know, great, I know exactly, I'll go at twilight when there isn't a whole lot of difference between light and dark. I'll go to this beautiful place where I know that there's a lot of sub-level detail. It's really the experience of holding your hand. My thoughts really about the iPhone 6 compared to the iPhone 5 is that it's the first camera phone that really feels like using a camera. Got past the point where it's taking pictures that are, in many cases, as good as a camera. This is the one where I get into the same sort of picture-taking mindset with the iPhone as I do with any conventional camera that I use.
Yeah, that is a big difference. Instead of just thinking, oh, I'm going to take a snapshot, this is an Instamatic, and I think this is probably part of the reason for this campaign, you can say, hey, you know what, this is actually a good camera, so I'm going to pay more attention, and I'm going to do it.
You can have high expectations of the work you can get out of it.
Right.
Did they mention if any of this stuff is JPEG straight out of the camera, or is there any post-processing?
In many cases, there is. For instance, the black and white images, obviously. This is Snapseed.
What's on the phone, though? As far as I know, everything
is taken right off the phone. They're being very upfront. Like, this is all in camera.
They tell you the app and the accessories as well.
So that's nice. I mean,
I don't think it's deceptive.
No.
But it's like, for instance, I've on my Android phones, I just started doing things like, well, what if I just shot HDR all the time?
Right.
And it's like, oh, every single picture now comes out much better than it used to be.
Right.
It really is all about, it's old adage about cameras. It's not just the camera itself. It's also knowing how to use it properly.
Yeah. I mean, a picture like this, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, that's
a pro.
Good.
You could tell, right? I mean, these are pros. Really gorgeous.
That's MGM, the biggest soundstage. They've rolled in the cloud backdrop.
do we
have anything from Brigadoon still in storage? We need.
There were a couple amateurs included as well. So
yeah, no. In fact, I'm guessing a lot of these are amateurs because the photo credits are often, in fact, in no case, include their last name.
Yeah. And they scoured the social, like the Instagram.
Yeah, some of these are from Instagram, right? Yeah. Kind of amazing. They are. It's a little deceptive because they're printed so beautifully at such a large size that makes it look good too.
But I wouldn't say deceptive. They're showing it off as best they can.
This is done with an all clip macro lens. Isn't that great?
I just think that sometimes this can do more harm than good, because I'll tell you why. I've just got the new Olympus OMD EM 5 Mark II released.
Yeah.
That just arrived a couple of days ago, and I'm trying to figure out how to take test photos with it, because any photos I take with this camera are going to be really not tell the story, because I've been using the older brother of this for an entire year and I know how this camera works. And also, I don't take snapshots. I really I spend way too much time trying to compose something and getting the lighting right. And so I feel as though I'll be convincing. I think you see a gallery like this, you might then take pictures the way that you take pictures and then wonder, gee, how come my sky is like all blown out? And how come mine isn't quite so sharp as that? How come my colors aren't as good?
Right.
The iPhone 6 is, I think, the best in class camera you can get when you talk about the entire system.
We're starting to see, comparisons between the iPhone 6, the Note 4 camera and blind tests and so forth. But
it's getting more complicated.
It's complicated, exactly.
Now that we're getting 16 megapixel cameras as the norm on a lot of Android phones, some of the advantages of Apple's post-processing is being blunted a little bit by virtue of the fact that this camera is just collecting a lot more information than the iPhone camera is, despite the fact that the iPhone camera is doing a better job of post-processing. So it's going to be interesting next year, I think, to see. Because if there's one thing I would love to see in the next iPhone camera, it really is at least 12 megapixels.
Yeah.
Because
they're starting to fall behind, aren't they? I mean,
well, They very wisely decided not to play the more megapixels game. Right. But the fact of the matter is that if you get, I would much rather have a 16 megapixel image that's not quite as good as an 8 megapixel image, because I can crop down a 16 better than I can with an 8.
Right.
Well, and I still would like to see better low light performance. I think the low light's gotten a lot better in the last iteration, but I think they could still keep on going that direction. I think that the average person, the number one thing that they have trouble with is inside taking pictures of their kids or their family or whatever, and it being grainy or blurry or
it's no accident these are all taken in daylight outdoors.
Things like if they had one button that simply said, "Hi, I'm taking pictures of my hyperactive kid. Do what you have to do." I think that would lead to so much better photography. Just to say, throw detail out the window, throw exposure out the window, just freeze my little kid.
Yeah. Still, this is such a great display. Apple.com/iPhone/world-gallery. These are just gorgeous images, and all taken
curated too. It's just just a lovely collection of photos.
Yeah. It's nicely done. Although, remember, Samsung at their event made a very big point of comparing shots from the Galaxy S6 with the iPhone 6. But I think you really nailed it, Andy. It's deceptive because you can be very aware of a camera's capabilities and play to them.
I don't want to say deceptive because that announces intent. I'm saying that I don't want people to get discouraged when they take pictures with their phone and they don't get pictures as good as the one one out of every 1,000 that the curator of this collection picked out because they were so impressive.
Right.
I know that even I myself, it gets so discouraging that why are my shots not as sharp as the ones I'm seeing? Why is the color in my shots not as good? And then you talk to the people who take those pictures. They tell you how they got the shot that way, and you realize that, so it's actual experience and knowledge and practice that helps you out.
So many of these are just straight from the camera. That's kind of
kind of
cool.
Who's a good dog? Who's a good dog?
You can't resist it, can you, Andy?
Sorry.
All right, let's
I think that one of the things...
Go ahead.
One of the things that's really... been interesting about this is from the time when we went from film, and in some ways I always felt like being a film photographer, you know, what made you a professional was to be able to afford to buy all that film. I mean, to get the number of iterations,
right?
Because a photographer would always tell you if they got one or two great images out of one roll of film, they're quite happy with that. And so when we moved to digital and finally got to a point where we could buy digital cameras that would let us take lots and lots of photos, and it's not just that we could take lots of photos, but we could iterate very quickly. We could see what we did at that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is the next step. And one of the reasons we're going to continue to see better and better pictures from these phones is because it's what we're carrying every day. And we're taking pictures all the time. And, you know, and it's just, and I think it, and as you keep on looking at it and with a little bit of critical eye and some review, I think a lot of people can become very good photographers, and I think this is just a representation of that.
Yeah. Yeah, really. It's quite amazing, isn't it? I mean, I remember very well people saying, I'll never shoot digital because it just doesn't carry the same quality and resolution as film.
Oh, how far we've come.
And now we're at the point, these are camera phone pictures. Yeah. That absolutely rival film pictures in every respect.
You know, you make fun of people taking selfies. You make fun of people using cameras in places where they should be looking at this wonderful vista or whatever, and judging people for it. I would never. What a beautiful thing that so many people are taking pictures as they go and creating art and creating something just as an incidental thing, not because they're putting on their pith helmet and their tripod and their $8,000, but just because, hey, that looks cool. I think I'll get a picture of it. Mm-hmm. That is just awesome.
And who hasn't had that experience of taking a picture and then getting back and looking at your iPhone and going, wow, I got a great one.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, one of the things that I love is my photo stream is on my TV at home. Mm-hmm. You know, it shows
me
up
too.
On my TV.
Yeah, my Apple TV.
And I just find it fascinating to come home and you just forget all these different photos that pop up, you know, from the past, and it is a lot of fun.
We're gonna take a break. Your picks, gentlemen, coming up in just a bit. Our show today brought to you by our buddies at Squarespace. Now that you have all those gorgeous pictures, why don't you put them up on a Squarespace site, make a portfolio, start your career. Lots of photographers choose Squarespace. It's a great place, both hosting and software, to create your professional website, your blog, your online store. Elegant interface, beautiful templates, incredible 24/7 customer support right from the Squarespace offices. And if you are a photographer, you're going to really appreciate the Squarespace Portfolio iPad app, which will take images from your Squarespace site and display them for your clients in a way that they can approve them, they can see the portfolio in a very convenient, easy way. That's a nice feature. Squarespace does a lot of great apps. That's the Portfolio app right there for iPad or iPhone. And it's so easy to use. There's something about, especially if you're somebody with an aesthetic sense, having tools to create a site that reflects you and your sense. It's not cookie cutter. Every Squarespace site is unique. You start with those great 25 or 30 beautiful templates, but then you really can easily make it your own, make it reflect your taste, your point of view. You can also add, of course, all the media and the social networks and stuff like that. And all of this for $8 a month. I was really pleased. My daughter, Abby, wanted to start a kind of a public service site with a good friend. And I gave them a list of sites. I figured, well, they're going to do this for free. So I only gave them free sites. And they ended up using Squarespace. And I said, well, that one's not free. They said, yeah, but it was so much better. And we had so much control. And we feel like the privacy features, the collaboration features were so great. And I was so gratified because I hadn't even mentioned it to them. I said, I'm proud of you. You chose the right hosting service. E-commerce too, by the way. In fact, they could take donations. Every website comes with a free online store or a place where you can take donations. With cover pages, this is a new feature in Squarespace 7. You could set up a beautiful one-page online presence in just a minute. That could be part of your site or as a separate thing. Perfect for creating quick landing pages, not just for your brand, but maybe if you got a new product or a new service you'd like to promote. Here's the deal. You could try it free right now. Go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button, and you're done. You don't need a credit card or anything. You don't need our offer code. You've got the run of the place for 2 weeks. You can even import some content from your old site to see what it looks like in the spiffy new Squarespace site. When you do decide to sign up, I invite you, and I don't think Abby used this, to use the offer code MACBREAK, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace, it really is amazing. Squarespace.com. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Make sure you use the offer code MacBreak to get 10% off your new Squarespace site. Picks of the week time. Let's start with Rwanda. Kilgali.
So I had
Alex Lindsay.
I had a request on Twitter as to what I use for time lapse. And the app that I've been using the most for time lapse photos is Lapsit. Have you seen Lapsit?
See, I've been using Hyperlapse all the time, so I haven't really looked for anything better.
Well, Hyperlapse is great when you're taking a video and then compressing it, but you may want to leave it. I don't know if I would use it to like sit I'm not sure if I would use. I use Hyperlapse a lot, so I will say that. But I like the settings in time lapse or in Lapsit. I'm sorry. And it's a really easy one where you can very quickly build up you can set up your settings of exactly.
So this is more for slowing it down than speeding it up?
Well, it'll speed it up because you're setting
intervals. Oh, I see. You're watching a flower bloom or something like that. Yeah.
Right, right. So yeah. I've used it for a bunch of time lapses of us building some of our setups and everything else. And it's just a great one. You just hook your phone to a tripod. I put it on a little rig and throw it on a tripod. And then I go. And the time lapse is good. I guess I feel like I use time lapse mostly as a quick and easy. I'm just going to capture something in video and then I'm going to hold it really still. And then it's going to turn it into something magical. This one gives me a lot more control, than that gives me. So anyway, Lapsit is you have different ways of encoding it and how many frames per second and what the frame intervals are. So instead of saying six times faster, eight times faster, you're, able to kind of, set that up. So anyway,
now there's free with a $199 pro version. What do you get if you spend a little more money? Is it,
I don't remember.
I immediately bought version. It, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do that too.
Well, you end up with two apps otherwise. You buy the basic one and you're like, I just want the pro version.
Yeah.
So, it's usually some little thing, but I had the pro version. For, again, it's the price of a coffee, not even a cappuccino.
Right.
The price of a coffee for $1.99. The quote unquote pro version is half a coffee in there. That's the best one. The one that I've been the most happy with. I use both of those a lot, but this is the one where I'm trying to I'm going to set it on a tripod and I'm going to then capture whatever we're going to capture for the next hour or two. This has been a great solution.
Lapsit. Lapsit.com. And they have an Android version, too. So that's nice. Renee Ritchie, what do you got for us?
I got a couple things. I'm pretty sure I didn't pick this previously. It came out a couple weeks ago, but it's the new version of CalcBot from TapBot, which was introduced, I think it was February 19th, but it was an older app. They gave it a complete makeover. It now has, you know, iOS 8 style design and functionality. And it just, it's clean. It's really nice. There's a single in-app purchase to give you conversion features, which used to be in a separate app called ConvertBot. And TapBot as a company now has done a makeover, and they're only going to be focusing on a couple apps going forward because they're a really small team. They're, you know, two iOS developers, one Mac developer, but they're doing great work.
Tell me they're not giving up on TweetBot.
No, TweetBot is getting a lot of their attention. They announced TweetBot 4, which is going to be iPhone, iPad, and or universal. I don't know if they've made that clear or not yet. But
it's gutsy of them because Twitter just really doesn't like the ecosystem, the third-party ecosystem.
It's so confusing now. It's hard to tell. They were staunchly for it at the beginning. Then they were staunchly against it. It was sort of like when you send your significant other to college and then they leave you for a hotter looking significant other when they graduate.
Has that happened to you? It sounds like a pain point there.
Well, no, but I mean, that's essentially like the Icon Factory with Twitterific and TweetBot and Tweety all helped build up Twitter.
Yeah.
And then they decided they wanted to appeal to celebrities in the mainstream and basically did all they could to kill the brands.
And monetize, really.
It was really absolutely.
Yeah.
The second app I wanted to bring up was there's a new version of Vesper, which is John Gruber, Dave Wiskus, and Brent Simmons' app. And full disclosure, they're all friends of mine, but they make a note-taking thought collection app for the iPhone, and it just went universal as well. So now it's iPhone and iPad, which means you can also sync now between iPhone and iPad. And the nice thing about this, well, depending on your point of view, is they raised their price. They tried going down. They were initially $5. They went down to $3. Now they've gone back up to $9, but it's on sale for around, I think, $7 or $8 right now. And the big advantage, they've decided that they just can't build this app. They can't sustain this app at low prices. Brent famously took a job at Omni because, you know, he wasn't making enough off Vesper to make it his full-time job. And they would rather make a sustainable app or not make an app at all. And I have no problem spending $5, $10, you know, for Omni Group is a great example of developers that price their apps for sustainability. For an app that I use every day, all day, you know, for weeks and months and years on end. And their big hope out of this, I saw an interview with John Gruber on Jason Snell's Six Colors site, where he was hoping other developers can start doing more of this. And there have been a few who've done it. And so far, all the feedback I've seen is that they sell less copies, but they make more money. And their overhead for everything else is lower when they do this. And it's going to come to a point where we have to pay not just for the apps we have, but for the apps that we want and for the developers that we enjoy to keep making these apps because there really are, you know, not a lot of alternatives. I mean, there are a lot of free alternatives, but if you want apps from these kinds of people, you've got to pay for those apps. So I'm hoping that like QBranch, there are going to be other developers who say, this is what it costs to make this app. This is what we're charging. And like everyone joined in the race to the bottom, we hope you join the race to sustainability.
I agree with you. And $8 is nothing.
Right. Yeah. Me too. I just concur. Like I was just thinking about Overcast, where I mean one of my many comments about it positive was that I'm glad that Marco is actually charging real money for this as opposed to get the whole thing for 99 cents, because I feel very, very positive when I feel like I'm helping this person continue to do something they love doing, which is to continue to make this app. I don't want them to feel as though, well, that was 2 years of my life and I made a whole pile of $6,000 from it, which is good enough for me to cover the moving expenses for the job I'm going to have to take on the other coast because I can't make a living off of app development.
And selfishly, I want apps to cost a little bit more, not a lot more, but a reasonable amount of money because I want to know they're going to be around.
Yeah.
You know, like I want to know that that's a good business and they've got money to develop and they can maybe hire other programmers to make it even better. When it's free and I don't understand how they're going to make money with it or 99 cents and I'm not sure, you know, it actually worries me that the app isn't going to be successful long term and I'm going to get a whole bunch of data into it and then it's going to be gone or never updated, you know, like... what was it? The one that we still miss. It's not Glimpse. It's never mind.
Forget it.
So many.
See how quickly you forget.
See, it's gone. It's already gone. And but it was free, and of course we were very excited about it. We used it every day. It became part of our system, and then it just one day they just like, you know, turned off the switch.
Yeah.
Or they get sold and the company that buys them turns them off. Or, yeah.
Right.
Andy and Akko, your pick of the week.
Two picks, hopefully two quick ones. This happened to arrive today. It is at long last. The Bandwagon on Blu-ray just got released today. I pre-ordered this in December as soon as I found out that it was available, because it is not just, it is definitively my favorite musical ever, and it might be, it's definitely one of my top 10 or 15 movies ever. And I got my mail at like 10:15. I thought, do I have enough time to rip this before the show? Because I can't use the CPU for something other than streaming video. And it finished about 10 minutes before. And I spent 10 minutes watching the MP4 file and single stepping through the dance. Oh, good heavens. It's such a beautiful, beautiful movie.
Book by George S. Kaufman, which makes it a great musical.
Actually, it's...
Is it not? Maybe I'm wrong.
No, it's Betty Comden and Adolph Green. It's a classic.
Oh, okay.
Directed by Vincente Minnelli, Arthur Freed production, and I don't think that there's ever been a better movie made. It's just exceptional.
And Oscar Levant is so funny in it. I just love him in that.
Exactly. Neurotic, pill-popping,
yeah.
Sad sack.
And this is the one with, gotta shine on my shoes.
Yeah, exactly. And
a song in my heart.
Yeah. And I don't want to replay the entire movie for everybody, but
Comden
and
Green, I love that.
I just love it
so
much.
Yeah. Oh, and the Girl Hunt Ballet, who could forget that?
See,
Sid Charisse.
I keep watching that and trying to make logical sense of it. I think it's like Birdman, where you're not supposed to try to work out what happens.
Just enjoy it. Sit back and enjoy it.
But the dance between Fred Astaire and Sid Charisse in Central Park.
It's amazing.
Both, not just is it a beautiful dance, but it's also the what it represents and the role that it plays in the story. I don't think there has ever been a single better musical or dance number in any movie ever.
Is that Dancing in the Dark? Is that the one?
Exactly, yeah. I was single stepping through it, and even when you're playing it at like 1/20th speed, it's still gorgeous, and you still have no idea how these two people managed to do something that beautiful.
So it's a good Blu-ray to get.
It's good. I wish that it were like remastered Blu-ray, where we went to the original camera internegative and they struck a brand new print.
No.
I think that, but it's better than it was before. I think this was the first time I've seen The Bandwagon where I recognized it. Oh, so Fred Astaire is supposed to have like reddish hair. I did not know. He's wearing reddish hair.
A
in
red
this
wig.
Movie.
Look at that.
Exactly.
Well, it really is the Birdman of 1953. So I think you should. Because it kind of has some similarities.
And also shot in one contiguous shot, one take. That was it.
It's amazing how they did that.
Vicente Minnelli said, do you want to do one more for safety? And then they all said, look, we've been dancing for 2.5 hours now. What you got is good enough. There's such thing as overthinking this, Vicente. But my iOS pick is this really cool alphabet app for toddlers called Metamorphabet. And it is just a multi-touch like alphabet book in which they go from letter to letter and you touch and interact with it. You have letter C, and then it turns into something related to the letter C. You get to see it in three dimensions, and now cone, and it says cone. And it turns into,
toddlers are going to suddenly think that the iPad is real life.
Yeah, it's like a busy box, and it keeps morphing into other things. And now the cone becomes a car. And the caterpillar's driving the car. And you can play with the car. But it's supposed to appeal to like people, kids who are like pre-verbal and they're just tactile. But it's like, ooh, look, the caterpillar's driving the car. I wonder what he becomes next. Anyway,
my question is how many people stare at you when you're at the train station pushing around a little car?
Exactly.
You know?
And then,
look
kid,
at the car. Look at the car.
And the kid wants a copy of it. And here's.
And when they do laugh at you, just look at them and just go, see.
Yes. You almost want to like keep a copy so that if you get stuck behind like a crying like kid like on an airplane, let him borrow your iPad and let this. And at least the noises it'll be make are at least OS approved. Door done. Ooh, look, and you can make the sun bounce up and down. Oh, what's this now? Oh, look. Anyway, yes, we're all kind of mesmerized by this. It really does plug into our like, Ooh, it daydreams.
You know, I bet you this is also really popular at colleges where there's a lot of acid and being passed around.
Around 4:20 p.m., am I right?
Woo! Yeah, they're like, oh, dude. Oh, that is deep.
It's and the just, Aqua Teen Hunger Force of tablet apps.
For those of you who haven't seen The Bandwagon, I just have a little clip of that famous Fred Astaire, Sid Charisse moment where they're dancing in Central Park, and it's just, it's so beautiful. It's...
See, it's the precision of movements. Every nuance is considered.
That's actually Gilda Radner and Steve Martin from, I think, like the 80s. Hey, this just came in from 9 to 5 Mac, a leak of Apple's Apple Watch retail pitch. We got a minute. Security Now starts at 1:30 in 15 minutes. So if you want, we could just run through it. Here's the first part. Many customers have already decided they want an Apple Watch. With the right questions and the Apple steps of service, you can make a great Apple Watch recommendation that suits both personal style and lifestyle. What does your customer already know? Listen for cues that reveal what they care about. Then highlight the ways the Apple Watch will add value to their life. What interests you most about Apple Watch, you might ask? How do you see yourself using the Apple Watch? And tell me about who this is for. Is it for yourself or someone else? Is there a special occasion? Ask them if their iPhone is compatible, and if not, position the benefits of upgrading to one that is. Why not? Discover what they love about their iPhone now, then highlight how Apple Watch would enhance the experience. I don't know where Mark Gurman got these, but as we know, they're training people now. So obviously,
how do you feel about not having food for another 3 months?
What's their personal style? Are you looking for a watch that's more casual or formal? Would you like additional bands to suit different occasions? Do you prefer metal or leather bands? I like metal bands myself.
AC/DC.
AC/DC, you bet. Anyway. It's all on 9to5 Mac if you want to read up, but we'll find out soon enough. We'll be back. We'll be back in 5 minutes, but we'll be back next week as well for special coverage of the Apple Watch. What we presume to be the Apple Watch event, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC next Monday, the 9th. And then Tuesday, a great Mac Break Weekly, Renee Ritchie, Serenity Caldwell in studio with you guys. We'll be talking about what we know. Renee and Serenity are going to be at the event, so they'll have had some, I would guess, some additional hands-on with the Apple Watch. Thank you, Andy and Akko. Chicago Sun-Times, love your blurred background. Sunday in the Park with George?
Indeed it is.
Wow, I can't believe I got that. When you make a 8-bit version of a pointillist painting, it really does kind of dissolve.
Actually, it's fewer than 8-bit. I actually did it as square pixels. I thought, no, that's too Minecrafty, so I decided to do it 3x1 pixels.
I like it. Boy, I can't believe I guessed it. I was kind of joking.
I thought it wasn't. I would be surprised if people weren't able to guess that after a little bit.
I remember calling it Saturday in the Park with George in front of Mr. Steve Martin, and he said that was a good day too.
Sending the wrong day.
Thank you, Renee Ritchie. iMore.com. Always a pleasure. Look forward to seeing you in town next week.
Absolutely. Likewise.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Sir.
Maybe we'll do some roller derby with Serenity if we have a little extra time.
Watch out. She's dangerous.
Tell her to bring her skates, okay?
We'll do.
You're dangerous. You showed me some dangerous stuff.
It was Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Leo. It's the art of love.
Holy cow. The art of love and asphyxiation.
We got to talk about your upbringing. Either you had older brothers or a situation you should have been rescued from.
Something. Mr. Alex Lindsay, all the way, thank you, from Rwanda. Man, that's awesome. Pixelcore.com. Follow him at Alex Lindsay. He's always doing some interesting thing or other that he tweets about. Yep. Lindsay. Thanks, guys. Great show. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. And next week, it'll be 1800 UTC. Just as soon as I figure out how to do the daylight time, the non-daylight time, so then we're back in daylight time again. Someday, it'll just be noon when the sun is overhead. That's all we ask. If you can't watch live, on-demand audio and video available at twit.tv/MBW, youtube.com/MacBreakWeekly, or subscribe. I think that's the best way to get it, in iTunes or whatever you use to get your podcasts, your Overcast app on your iPhone or whatever. Make sure you get every edition. This was episode 444. So that's pretty cool. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work because break time's over.